And that happens. And also the issue in boxing, there's no real barriers to entry for people
Yeah, no.
who come and advise a fighter who might be their mate or might be their Uber driver on the way to the arena, you know, who suddenly decides to advise the fighter to, I don't know, triple his purse. Oh, you're not getting paid enough, man. Like, you know, you're gonna have three times that.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't really make sense. You know, you've got a proper fight when no one's bad mouthing. You know, like Fre Kessler Frotch was, you know, they're all right. They like each other now. They text each other. I mean, yeah, you say things in the heat of a moment. Well, I would never say something like that, but you hear people, you know, and people are emotional after a fight, you know. But once the dust settled, look, there's so many people, I think, in boxing that I've sort of had disagreements with in the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
Afterwards, you just like shake hands. Now, I don't think there's anyone in boxing really, bar a couple of people, that I wouldn't, you know, have a coffee
Coffee with,
with.
yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's, you know, there is some honor amongst thieves.
Hello, and welcome to Boxing Life Stories with me, Tristix.
What happened in the ring after Tyson Oleg was child's play compared to that one?
Still have goosebumps to this day.
Just, you couldn't take the tears from his eyes or the smile off his face, could you?
I know.
I shouldn't have beaten me. He should want that boy in the back.
And the paper, they made me look like Al Capone.
This is going to be your night.
There's winning, and there's nothing else.
Hello and welcome back to Boxing Life Stories with me, Tris Dixon. This week I'm joined by promoter Nissa Sauerland, who along with brother Kala have become significant players on the global boxing scene, following in the footsteps of their Hall of Fame father Wilfred. Kala might be the one who gets the most press, but I think I might have known Nissa longer. You can hear my interview with Kala, by the way, in the archives, and I've wanted to do this with Nissa for a while. Maybe the next step is to get them both together, should we do one in the future. Nisa's a great guy to talk to, and here he discusses the big names he's worked with, whether it's Arthur Abraham, Mikhail Kessler, Nikolai Valuev, Groves, Hay, and many others, the rebranding with Wasserman Boxing, a few nights where disaster struck, and much more besides. He also is up for a laugh, as you can tell. He recounts his days at university while working at Babe Station, which is a very, very unique story indeed. A reminder, guys, that if you want to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/Tristixon, where you get episodes early. You can also follow me on social media, at Tristixon on Twitter and Instagram. And Boxing Life Stories has its own handle on Facebook and on YouTube. You can also find it on Instagram, so just search Boxing Life Stories. On YouTube, by the way, the videos are going up regularly. We do need sponsors to keep the YouTube side of things going. So if you are aware of businesses, whether they're in boxing or the lifestyle spheres, then by all means, drop me a line. Huge thanks to my sponsors who've allowed the podcast to keep going thus far, Hanson Lee Resourcing. They were voted the UK's best specialist insurance sector recruitment firm at the 2020 Corporate Excellence Awards. Not only do they find you the best people, but Hanson Lee help you retain them. And you can find out more at hansonlee.com. And now here's Nissa Sauerland. Nissa, great to see you. It's been a long time coming. I don't know when we first did our, or when our first interview was, but it had to be way over a decade ago.
Definitely. You've definitely grown in that time as well.
Not as much as Kala.
That's true. That's true.
What does the name Sauerland mean in boxing?
I think it's, you know, we've obviously, you know, my dad has obviously been in this game for 42 years. I think it's synonymous with good quality, good matchmaking, and good events generally. And you know, we normally provide a lot of entertainment factor. You know, people see us as used to see us, I think, as German. Obviously, me and my brother have grown up in the UK, and you know, we're making moves in the UK as well. So we're international, I'd say.
It's now partnered with Wasserman. It's Wasserman Boxing. Is Sauerland Boxing still a thing?
It's now Wasserman Boxing. Obviously, it's still me and my brother with the same surname, and my dad, you know, giving us advice still. Same team that we've had for a very long time. Simply, we're working under Wasserman. We're working under a massive banner. Wasserman, I think we've said this in a lot of interviews, a huge company. 20-odd offices around the world, over 1,000 employees. I think in the UK alone they have 100 Premier League players under contract. So it's you know, it's something that we can use their infrastructure and make us more into a real powerhouse again.
Is it like an agreement over a certain amount of years, or is it you're all in and this is just what it is now?
No, we are all in. You know, we want to make Wasserman Boxing as big as we possibly can. We've worked with them for many years with George Groves, so we already had a relationship. And it came at the start of lockdown, and I had a phone call, and it was like a eureka light bulb moment where I was like, that's a great idea. Why not? You know, they love boxing. We know our boxing. They know their commercials value. They know all sports. And let's take our expertise and take it to the next level.
What does your dad make of it?
My dad's happy. My dad's happy. You know, obviously, look, he's built a great company over many years. But in some ways, you know, me and my brother were saying that we need to bring Team Sauerland a little bit into the new millennia, modernize it. But I think, you know, doing this and joining up with Wasserman does that. It's a rebrand as Wasserman, and you know, we've joined them, and you know, we're happy. We're really happy. We've got the same team. You know, we've got people who've worked with us for 15 odd years, and you know, we know how to do events. And we know how to matchmake, we know how to move our fighters in the right way. And that's what we're going to continue doing. We've been given a really good brief by Wasserman to do that.
Going back, did your dad want you involved in boxing in the first place?
No. I think, you know, he's obviously, you know, I think the story dates back to when he was doing business in Zambia. 40 years ago. I can actually show you the clip of the first fight he did there. I'm sure my brother's told you this story, because you know, if you had a 2-hour podcast with my brother, you know, he's definitely covered this story. So he was doing a deal in Zambia. He was into breweries and machinery, and the head politician, the president, whoever, said, look, they're about to sign one of the biggest deals my dad's ever done. Sorry, I didn't explain that. And the guy just turned to him, the president. He said, look, you've got to put on a show. This is the last thing, and then we'll sign the deal. My dad was like, of course I'm going to put on a boxing show in Zambia. No problem, easy. And he had met a week before in a nightclub in London called Tramp, still around, a guy called Mickey Duff, which I'm sure, you know, one of the old school promoters. And he called Mickey. He said, look, Mickey, we have to do a show in Lusaka. We will cover all the costs. Don't care what it costs. We just need to put this guy Lotti Moale on. They did it. 70,000 or so came, didn't pay an entrance fee, because, you know, back in the day it was quite a poor country. And the show was quite a success, and my dad got the bug from there. I've actually got the footage, so if you, I've got it on my iPhone. I'll show it to you at some point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
really, you see Mickey and my dad in the front row, and then you sort of you see Lottie in the ring with like a crowd of people up. I think it's like a mountain. It's mad.
So, were you interested in boxing from the start?
Yeah. I've always wanted to work in boxing. I always have, you know, in one way or the other, whether it's sort of going to fights, you know, as a 10, 11 year old, or...
What was the first fight you went to? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was... sorry, I'm swearing.
That's all right.
It was in Atlantic City, I think.
Okay.
And it was John McGarvey.
Okay.
But I can't remember who he fought. I just remember that there was mirrors on the ceiling of the hotel. I remember being like a 10 or 11 year old going, you know, Dad, what the? Why are there mirrors on the ceiling? You know, it was when Atlantic City was in the heyday.
Yeah, I was going to say, a bit different.
Now it's, those mirrors are probably,
crumbled.
Yeah, used for other purposes.
Yeah, but maybe still in the hotel.
Yeah, exactly.
So, boxing, what a weird and wonderful life it's given you. Like, do you sometimes stop and think, I could have done something far more straightforward?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you see, you know, kids are at school with dads who are in property or bankers or lawyers or whatever, you know, whatever profession. That's a regular check, but then on the flip side, it's like, it doesn't really excite me. It excites some people, and also I don't think my grades would have been good enough to do any of those things.
You've obviously mentioned Callow a couple of times already. What are the differences between you guys?
I think, you know, me and my brother were pretty similar. Although my brother speaks a lot more.
He's more the front man, isn't he?
Yeah, I think...
Are you happy with that?
I'm happy to be a front man, but my brother does it better. So I think you know, I have no problem with that. I will be the front man. I'm totally fine being the front man, but my brother does a great job doing it. And you need to, if someone's better than you at going up front on a football team, you got to go midfield. That's fine. You know, you need to set up the goals. So I've always been totally fine with that. And he's a great front man.
He went to boarding school, didn't he? Am I right in thinking your parents were living in Germany and you guys came to boarding school here in London? Is that right?
No, I don't think so. No, we moved to the UK when my brother was about, I think, 2 years old. I was about a month or two old.
Right.
And then we spent 4 years here, then moved to Switzerland for a few years.
Okay.
Where we kind of went semi-boarding school. Sometimes we boarded, but not really.
Sure.
But yeah, no, we moved here pretty sharpish after I was born.
Were you a Tottenham fan as well, are you?
Yes. Yeah. For my sins, I mean, I don't know why. I mean, I always start the season so positive, check every score, watch every game. I actually watch every game anyway, but... you know what, it's a hard life being a Spurs fan.
Did you try boxing yourself?
Yeah. Not very well. No, I mean, look, I started boxing when I was about 15. I did a few white collar fights. Got my nose broken by... But I think he was a Big Brother contestant. His name was Caesar. I just remember him going into the Big Brother house and getting thrown out after like a few days because he's quite an awful character. But so my first fight was against him. And I just remember this pretty clearly, actually, considering I took a pasting. So we were at the Kensington Town Hall, you know, about 1,000 people. I sold about 400 to 500 tickets. This guy turns up on his own, gets introduced, Caesar the Geezer, something or other. Shorter than me, absolutely pounds me around the ring. I'm all right. I lost to the end. Nose broken. I was barely standing at the end. I just lasted it though. It gets announced as a draw. I mean, that's a German decision. I think the crowd sort of influenced that one. He went into Big Brother after that and got thrown out. I think it was like the record. No one liked him. He just got thrown out. It's quite a weird character.
When you were a kid, did you support German or English fighters? Dad was promoting?
I think it was always when my dad supporting, and I think it's still like that for me. I support the fighter. I don't think it necessarily always. Obviously, if it's something I'm not interested in and an Englishman is fighting an American, I'll go for the English guy.
Sure.
Unless unless I watch a really good, shoulder program where I'm like, oh, I like this American kid. He's got a great story.
Okay. Sure, yeah.
But I don't think boxing always needs to be about where you're from. I think it's also about, like, we saw Usyk against Joshua, just the art of boxing. It transcends. It doesn't matter where you're from. You can appreciate what Usyk did in that ring against Joshua. Sure. Obviously, I wanted Joshua to win. But I'm not. After seeing that performance, you're not that disappointed?
No, sure.
And I'm excited for the rematch. Yeah. You know, I can't wait for the rematch.
Who were some of the fighters you were exposed to from your dad's stable then when you were young? You mentioned Mugabe there.
Yeah, John Mugabe, obviously. A guy called Chom Chituwile.
Okay.
I can't say. He fought Barry McGuigan. Barry McGuigan stopped him, I think, in 9. He was my babysitter.
Okay.
One of them. Then it was Peter... A Kenyan fighter, totally gone. He used to train with George Francis. Obviously, Bruno, back in the day. Best fight I ever saw live, probably still to this day, is Nigel Benn against McClellan.
Right.
Nigel Benn was one of my favourites. Obviously, Eubank as well. All that whole era was unbelievable. Marvin Hagler was one of my favourites. Leonard. I'm trying to think. Hector Camacho I kind of liked as well. Just like the chain, I thought he looked... Back in the day, I thought he was kind of cool. I was trying to think if I go a bit more into the modern day. Yeah, I mean, with my dad, I got exposed to, Chelko Mavrovic. Fought Lennox Lewis.
Big Croatian,
yeah, he's a lovely guy. And if you think about the UK sort of side of things, we had Stephen Smith, who was Darkie Smith's son.
Yep.
Remember, he fought Hatton and Darkie jumped in the ring. I think it was Mickey Van was the ref. I've been exposed to all different fighters. But just, you get attached to fighters for different reasons. One guy you might like his speed, one guy you like his power, one guy you like his attitude out of the ring, one guy you like his flamboyance, like Hector Camacho. It's all different guys.
What was your first job in boxing?
My first job in boxing was I studied production at university.
Which uni?
Oh, I went to a few. Got thrown out of a few. I quite like the nightlife at the universities a bit too much. I went to an American university in London.
Okay.
In the end, because they had a very good media production.
Right.
So
when you talk about, sorry I interrupt, but when you talk about shoulder programming,
yeah,
and that's quite a new sort of terminology for boxing fans, but shoulder programming, obviously, where you get to meet the characters and get to meet the guys behind the scenes.
I think it's just so important for boxing.
You understand it from a different level, from a production level,
yeah,
and the importance of it. How it's done.
I ended up making sports documentaries. So when I left uni, I made sort of documentaries on Gert Müller, Marco van Basten, Ruud Gullit, Beckenbauer. So yeah, I think they're still knocking about on Sky. Sometimes they get shown, and sometimes when you get on a flight, you'll see it as well.
Oh really? And they're yours?
Yeah, they're you'll see produced and written by yours truly.
Why didn't you stick to that then?
Babe Station. I was a producer there.
You went to? Whoa! Hang on.
Yeah, that was during uni. I was a Babe Station producer.
So, what does that job look like then? What did you
do? I actually bought my first flat through financing it through Babe Station. It was, I used to go uni all day. Then I had a little electric car, like one of the first electric cars where you could just park in Westminster. That's where my uni campus was.
Okay.
And I'd drive across the Great Portland Street where the Babe Station studios were, go in, take a six pack with me. You know, you work 8 till 2, sometimes 3 if you got the late shift. And
there's too many jokes there about how long you got to stay there.
Yeah, no, and then it was the best job ever, man. They used to pay you very well, and you had to come up with like different themes. So you'd have, I don't know, the wet t-shirt competition or whatever, which was,
that job for?
Do you know what? If I'm honest, I did it for 4 months. And then I got moved downstairs there was another, I think it was like a dating show that I worked on, just because the hours were better, because I was working like 8 till 2 or 3 every night, getting home at 4, going back to uni. So it was it was quite hard to do, but it was quite fun. I think I've still got some mates there. They've moved up to Milton Keynes now. I've got some friends if you ever.
So what was your job? What was your job then?
I was a producer.
So what do you produce?
I don't really know. I produce something.
So you direct people and tell them what to do.
Yeah. Your job is to sell TV. You know, like, so people call up and talk to these girls.
Right.
That's where the income comes from. Okay.
So you weren't really producing pornos?
No.
But you were doing the stuff in front of camera? Like,
yeah, no, just tell him to do this, that. You do the camera work and stuff and the switching. It definitely wasn't as bad as that. No. I got moved downstairs to the dating show just because the hours were better.
I was going to say, did you ever see a different path for yourself than boxing? But clearly were you always thinking like, this is just a means to an end, I'm going to wind up in boxing?
I mean, I was doing the internationals, so I was doing a lot of the international broadcasts. Coordinating productions, making sure the running orders fit, the timings, so, you know, sometimes cutting trailers together, but just made me watching and studying boxing. You know, that's what I've always liked to do. And I would say that, one, you know, when you get too busy, you don't, and also sometimes when you're too in the sport, and, you know, it's show after show, which actually one thing lockdown has done for me is actually appreciate boxing and watching it again.
Mm.
Because when you're doing, you know, 25 to 30 shows a year, and you're watching them, you're going from town to town, you're not watching the other boxing because you're just not sick of it, but like,
you've had enough of it. Switch off.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Exactly. I had that, I think, you know, Saturday night was one of the first shows that I've enjoyed in a while. I was really into it. Mm. Really, you know, really enjoyed the fight. It's weird how that happens. And I think a lot of people may have had that experience from lockdown, from sort of not doing the job that they normally do. You know, the first couple of months were lovely. You know, I was at home. I took up cycling. Like, quit that when the cars came back on the road. But, you know, it was the London.
That's right, they'll be back off the road soon with no one getting any petrol.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, obviously, some people will know, obviously, people talk about Frank and Eddie, people talk about Bob Arum and King. Your dad had his own rival back in the day, didn't he? Tell me about that and how that went.
That was Peter Kuhl. It was an interesting one.
It was a long period of time where they had
had mutual respect, but they didn't like each other. It was a weird case. We both had massive broadcasting deals in Germany with public broadcasters.
So the equivalent of BBC and ITV.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were, you know, it was pretty open. People were, you know, they were going after each other's fighters or
staff.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah. You know, there's a lot of rivalry still there, and, you know, between, if you get certain people from different boards in Germany or wherever, they'll still be like, oh, it's the Sourlands. Or
and have dinner or do anything like that, or was it?
They're all right with each other. They're okay. They, you know, it's old school. They're fine. It was just a real rivalry between, you know, the two guys who had multi-million TV TV contracts, and there was a lot of talent back then. Now Germany's, the talent is, we've got some very good fighters, but it's not as good as it was.
Someone wrote to me years ago blaming you and Kalla for killing German boxing, saying that, you know, there's no good young fighters coming through, we've sort of had our lot, and you guys are at the top, so therefore you're responsible for no talent coming through, like, there's no infrastructure to do it. I mean, what do you get that a lot, and do you see that at all?
I mean, I don't think, you know, I think we always gave helped out amateur clubs where we could. You know, prime example for us is Stonebridge Boxing Club just here. I used to give them, you know, they were about to close down. It was in the Brent newspaper. I saw it. I called Ali, who's the head there. I said, look, Ali, this can't happen. You know, we can't let Stonebridge Boxing Club, this is my local sort of area, we can't let that close down. And we kept it open. We funded them for, I think, 6 or 7 years. And Lowell's one of the producers. Who you'll see, Mikel Lowell. He's one of the guys who's come through those ranks. We did the same in Germany. We always gave to a charity there called Boxing Against Violence or something like, which is a weird play on words, but it kind of makes sense in German. And we always supported like youth initiatives, but at the same time, the trainers from the old DDR, they went to the pro game. So you had Uli Wegner, he was training the pros. I think
for the longest time it was Uli and Fritz.
Yeah, Fritz Sudne, exactly, is another example. But I think one of the things is that the DDR, you know, the old East Germany, sorry, I don't know if I can even say DDR, the old East Germany, they produced a lot of very good fighters because they had the Soviet style of boxing,
sure,
a Cuban style of boxing. You know, if you look at Uli and then you compare him to a Cuban trainer, it's quite similar what they do, the techniques they do and you know, the mad amount of analysis they do.
So you think it's more to do with the current structure of amateur boxing in Germany?
I think amateur boxing in Germany is it's a mess at the moment. And I don't think enough fighters... I don't think there's enough fighters... enough people taking up boxing in Germany. It's not like here where, you know, pre-2012 it was quite... It was, you know, it wasn't booming. And then... Obviously, the Olympics came.
Sure.
Eddie came. Sky came. Gelled together. Boom.
Who was the last big hero in Germany? Mask?
Abraham.
Yeah. He was that level.
Yeah.
Is he as big as Mask?
No. Masker, Schultz, Axel Schultz. Storm did quite well.
Sure.
About the same level as Arthur. Sven Otker did quite well. Marcus Beyer did quite well, but the biggest was Masker.
Would any of those guys, Masker aside, would you call any of those guys crossover stars?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, Masker aside, no, Axel Schultz is definitely as well.
Is he?
I think he had the biggest viewing figure. He had 22 million or something like that.
Wow, okay.
Was that the second biggest ever, I think, next to the Germany in the World Cup final recently.
You and Calla, by the way, did you fight a lot as kids?
Yeah.
What's the age difference?
We had a fight recently.
What, physical?
Yeah.
Who won?
The draw. I'm not going to disclose any more information.
What's the age difference?
2 years. He's older than me. Yeah, before you.
why I asked the question.
Yeah. I. Do you know what? I enjoy boxing, and I enjoy. I haven't sparred in maybe 4 years, but I used to just enjoy just going and sparring. I really like it. I realized. Last time I think I went sparring, I was just getting hit a lot more than I was used to. I was like, right, okay, it's time to take up something else. So in the last lockdown, I got a one-on-one jiu-jitsu, Brazilian okay. jiu-jitsu. So I started doing that 3 times a week. And
great stuff. You're
enjoying it. You get used to the guys laying on top of you and whatever else. Yeah. But you get where, oh, it's brilliant. Once you start, you know, the sparring. And I think it's one of those sports that you can, it's probably one of the only ones that you can actually get better with age.
So have you got your own gi and stuff?
Yeah. But I'm still white belt.
When does that change?
Three stripes. God knows. To be honest, because I was planning to do July 17th. I was actually trying to make my weight correctly and everything. And I was on track.
You were going to have a fight?
I was going to do a tournament, yeah.
Okay.
But... got cancelled because of COVID. It's got moved to November 27th.
Okay.
So that's my next aim. But I wouldn't mind staying white belt because that means I still fight white belts. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to go in there and like, you know, but there's a lot of, also you realise that there's a lot of guys there who are like wrestlers or coming from judo, and they understand like all the arm, like the wrist locks,
all the key locks and different things.
It's killer. It's killer. So, yeah, I'm going tomorrow morning actually for a session.
Oh, good stuff.
It's quite fun. It's quite fun.
You mentioned Eubank, by the way, nearer the start, guys from your childhood and stuff. Have you been dealing with senior at all in the deal with junior?
Actually, my brother and senior get on very well. I get on obviously very well with senior as well. You know, we've had guys fight junior. We've had guys, you know, it's like it is in boxing. You know, so you never know where you're going to end up.
You've been with a man,
you know. And I've always liked junior. I've always been a big admirer of junior's skills, and I believe the best is still to come from junior.
Which is strange because he's now the age his dad was when his dad walked away.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He hasn't, you know, but the one thing is how many fights had senior had?
Oh, he'd had 20 more.
Yeah, 20 more.
He'd had those big ones with Carl Thompson and Cal Zaghi and some tough ones at the end as well.
Yeah. I think actually, if you look at it, people's boxers' careers, I don't know whether it would be, you know, you'd know more from the S&C side and whatever else. Are we peaking later now, diet wise? And
I think possibly as humans, but obviously ring mileage is still ring mileage.
Yeah.
Junior's mileage isn't that high because he hasn't had loads of those knockdown drag out wars.
No, not at all.
And obviously he didn't turn over super early and didn't have an extensive amateur career and all the rest.
No, exactly.
Of it, so.
I think sometimes it's the amateur career. If you've started when you're 13, had a few hundred amateur bouts and go pro and do 35 of them, you know, by the time you're 30,
I mean,
you're like...
I've got to say, you know, some of these guys coming out with 300 amateur fights, like, what are you learning in those last 100 fights that you haven't already learned?
But then tell that to Lomachenko.
Yeah, crazy amounts. But also think about how much money Lomachenko could have made as a pro if he turned pro 10 years earlier.
Yeah. I don't know. I do think that maybe we weren't ready for a Ukrainian. I don't know, in some weird way. You know, I think Golovkin. I'm trying to think if I'm digging a hole for myself here, but Golovkin opened up. I think everyone saw Eastern European sort of fighters from the Soviet style, Kazakh, Ukraine, Russia as opponents. Now we can watch a Golovkin who was marketed in the right way. We're like, whoa, this guy's amazing. And he had that right angle. He spoke English. He had a smile when he fought. And I think it's the same with Lomachenko. He's that good.
Usyk too now.
The Usyk too, exactly. But would that have happened 10 years ago? I don't know. I think we're more open-minded, and that's great, you know?
Yeah, possibly quite right. Who was the first fighter you've worked with that you became emotionally invested in? The first one. Obviously, I'm sure there's been plenty, but is there a first one where you remember being heartbroken at a defeat or... massively overjoyed at a victory?
I mean, you know, I think one obvious one was not the first, but one of the main ones, I think, is obviously George Groves, where it was the, you know, probably the roller coaster career. You know, it was mad. We signed him, gets knocked out, seventh round, was it, by Carl?
Yeah.
I remember I was in Russia. Oh, I was in a nightmare show in Russia. It was my birthday.
I was in China. Are we Pacquiao, Brandon Rios?
That was it. It was in Macau, was it?
Yeah,
I remember that. Bam Bam. Rios.
Yeah.
One of the best fights I ever saw was him.
Alvarado.
Yeah, the first one. I saw that. That was at, in LA. It was on the undercard of Donair against someone or other. And I was like, whoa, these guys, you know, they don't know defense. Sorry, just jumping off.
No. So, you sign Groves, he loses to Frotch.
Yeah, I'm stuck in Russia. Birthday, I think. It was on my birthday. It might have been 30th of May was my birthday. So I'm thinking, yeah. And then my guy in Russia loses as well. It was a disaster. And then, obviously, we get him back. It was against the French, oh my God, European title, silver, WBC.
Not Sabir, is it?
No.
Rabras.
Rabras, Thomas Rabras.
Christoph Rabras, yeah.
Told you, Mum, I can't remember names anymore. Christoph Rabras.
I think how old are you now?
42.
See, same as me. I think when you get to our age, you get into that category where people say, You know, people used to say about very intelligent people in boxing, he's forgotten more than you ever know.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually think we've probably forgotten more than we currently know.
I think that's definitely true. So then it was Rabras, and then a couple other fights, and then it was, then we went and we were, you know, riding a wave, went over to fight Badou Jack. Like, we're going to do this Mayweather undercard.
Vegas, yeah.
Lose, close decision. I think George got knocked down in the first round even. And obviously that nicked the fight probably to Jack. Still a close fight, contentious maybe. Then we go back. Can't remember who fought. Then it was a couple of other fights. And then we got the world title against Chudinov.
And obviously in that rollercoaster period, you had the Gutnet fight as well.
Yeah, that was a heavy fight.
I'll come back to that set.
And it was in Sheffield. I think it was my birthday again. It was around my birthday. So, yeah, it kind of shows what life is like sometimes, you know?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I've got Abraham here on my list ahead of Grove. So, Abraham, tell me about him as a character. So, I just see a fast car driving lunatic who was lethal at middleweight and then just not quite as good at 168.
I think.
How's that for a summary?
I think you've just summed him up. Next question, please. No, I totally agree about the middleweight. I think people are going to remember the super middleweight more, especially in this country. But you know, then they might laugh at me when I say at middleweight, if you'd have stayed there, it'd have been a tough fight for Golovkin. You know, I think that'd have been a great fight, those two. But. Yeah, he's an interesting character.
He likes fast cars and motorbikes.
Yeah, never made weight very well. I remember there was one instance when they got stuck in a lift before a weigh-in. And I don't know what he was doing in that lift, but he was up there for a long time, came back down and made weight. Came down and made weight. It was bizarre. It was one of the weirdest ones.
Was he in the lift alone?
Pardon?
Was he in the lift
alone? No, with his trainer, with Uli.
Okay.
Uli, who knows a few tricks to make weight. Actually, there's a few guys in this hotel, the MMA guys, they know how to make weight pretty well, don't they? I've seen a few walking around. He's an interesting character.
Did you guys ever buy him a car as a reward?
Is this a trick question?
No.
Did my brother say we did?
I can't recall. I'm just thinking, it's the sort of thing that happens, isn't it? Like a bonus in terms of a motorbike or a car or a watch.
I mean, I have to say that some fighters do like that. There's been a couple of watches bought, but not. Don't tell anyone that.
How close was Arthur to ever fighting Sturm? Did you guys ever have talks with the other side?
Well, they're talking about it now, but I don't think anyone wants to watch it anymore, sadly. We're even talking about Feigenbutt's Storm, which on? I think would be better. You know, it's a better fight.
Vincent Feigenbutt,
he's only 24. Yeah, it feels like he's been around forever.
Abraham, how close was it, like 2007?
It was close-ish, but I think the issue...
talks were taking place.
You know what, I think, like every fight, it's always quite hard when you've got competing broadcasters. So you need two broadcasters to come together and, you know, agree to do it on... You know, I think like BT and Sky were going to do with pay-per-view, were they?
Quite possibly. But HBO and Showtime.
Was it Fury Joshua? Was that said? I don't know.
If it was going to happen, that was likely.
That would have been the way. Yeah, yeah.
So what was the difference? Obviously, not just 8 pounds, but why wasn't Abraham the same at 168? Because you would have thought he was an elite middleweight. I think you'd agree, but he was a world class super middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's obviously a difference. What happened? Because he was such a big punch in middleweight. Obviously, he had those wars with Edison Miranda.
Yeah.
That was a mad night. Yeah. And everything
that
else.
The second one was a mad night.
That was in Florida, right?
Have you heard about the second one?
No, go on.
So he gets knocked out. Miranda gets knocked out. And then his brother, Alex Abraham, was okay pro. Was, you know, I think 18 fights or so. Kicks Miranda in the ring after he's on the floor. And we end up having to get him out of jail. He's banned from America now, I think. So it was a weird night.
Why did he kick him?
I think
emotions running high.
Yeah, I know. But he won the fight. I mean, it's a bit of a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really get it. I just, why, you know, I guess there's some personal beef there because of the jaw. Or I mean, you know, Uli was the equivalent of the English CPS, so the Crown Prosecution.
Yep.
They were gathering evidence, and I think they did charge Uli with a fray. I think I'm not a lawyer, for not throwing the towel in.
Wow.
Yeah, which is pretty nuts. They dropped it, but that was even being considered because he didn't throw the towel in, which is pretty insane considering he lost.
Jeez, for the first fight back.
Yeah,
in,
He lost a liter of blood, and. You know,
I remember all the pictures. And
yeah, got pins in his jaw and whatever else. Pretty bad.
Did you get on well with Abraham, or did you have some difficulties with him down there?
No. He's pretty. But, well, one thing, very loyal, which, you know, I think is underestimated in boxing, where there are a lot of disloyal people. And, you know, in some ways, you can't sometimes blame a fighter when they get turned from money. And that happens, and also the issue in boxing, there's no real barriers to entry for people who come and advise a fighter who might be their mate or might be their Uber driver on the way to the arena, you know, who suddenly decides to advise the fighter to, I don't know, triple his purse. Oh, you're not getting paid enough, man. Like, you know, you're gonna have three times that.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't really make sense. So, you know, there is a lot of that, but Arthur's always been a very loyal guy, and he, I think he made almost too much money as a middleweight, and the hunger went a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, the hunger went, the training went down, and I think, you know, like anything, even, you know, whatever you do, you need to keep some kind of hunger there, some kind of ambition, and his ambition laid elsewhere. The guy's, you know, he's making a lot of money out of other businesses now, and that's his new job, you know. But boxing, once your hunger goes and you're just sort of there to take
going
your check.
Emotions, it's not the
it's not the same, and it's, you know, can be dangerous. Yeah.
How good was that night, the first Super Six with him fighting Jermaine Taylor? Obviously, Jermaine ended up in a bad way, so I'm not saying that's a good thing, but obviously, you know, for Arthur to win big on that big opening night,
12th round, 10 seconds to go. I think.
Yeah,
yeah, I had a bit of money on that 12th round. That was an amazing. Yeah, it was at Berlin, wasn't it? In the O2, I think, if I recollect. I remember that very, very clearly. No, it was. That was a massive one. That was a massive one. That was a good tournament. That was a good tournament.
Super Six was lethal.
It was just
the fighters in that.
It just took
it was
too
such
long.
A tough gauntlet.
You know, that
was
the issue.
Yeah, there was loads going on, wasn't there?
I think with the Super Series, we kind of learnt the mistakes from that a little bit more. But it was a great tournament, you know, with America, Showtime, was it Showtime, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was an age.
Ken Hirschman.
Yeah, yeah, it? No, because I know Ken went to HBO, didn't he?
That's right, yeah.
Mixing it up.
Yeah, because you had Kessler, Abraham and Frotch from over here.
No one really knew who Ward was.
Ward.
Darrell.
And Taylor.
Taylor. And then Taylor got subbed out, didn't he?
Alan Green came in.
Alan Green, yeah. And then Kessler got knocked down by him. No, that was in a, no, that was
that was separate. Yeah,
that was separate. Yeah.
But Kessler Frotch one will always be one of my favourite fights.
Both
that I've been at.
Both of them are amazing.
And for me, there was something else about the first. I think it might have been because of how primeval the event was in terms of how patriotic the fans were. Because you know, you sometimes think in football you have a 12th man and it's the crowd.
Yeah.
Kind of got the feeling that night that Kessler was being roared on by all of Denmark. The whole venue was shaking and it was just an incredible fight.
The fans in Denmark are pretty unbelievable. I mean, when you hear the anthem, you don't know what on earth they're saying.
I was at Brian Nielsen's fight with Tyson.
Oh yeah, in the park, and 40,000 people. Yeah. Morgans.
Yeah.
Good old Morgans. Yeah,
he's still going to come on to him in a minute.
He's still around.
Yeah,
he still hates us.
What we say.
He still hates us. He still hates us.
So, and that was over Kessler, primarily.
Yeah.
I just don't
think it's okay to take, you know, that level of money off a fighter, you know, allegedly. But we can come to that whenever you like. I think
Well, I mean, talking of Kessler Froch, I mean, that first fight, I think it was one of the first times where I've actually felt guilty being ringside. And I remember Keller that night had ballsed up the seating plan. And so he said, look, I'll get you a chair. And he ran and got me a chair and sat me right on the ring apron.
Wow. Okay.
And
that's good of him.
Yeah. And I felt guilty.
I was in row 8.
I felt guilty, like, just at what those guys went through, Froch and Kessler. And yeah. It makes you think, like, you know, how much these guys put out. There are some fights like that where they dig so deep and they take so much abuse where you think,
yeah,
that's a great watch, yeah, but it's hard to stomach at the same time.
Superhumans.
Yeah.
Superhumans. I just, you know, when you watch guys like that, you just think they're built from something else. You know, it's just not normal, the amount of, like you say, the amount of punishment they both took. But also it was done in the right taste.
I know what you mean, because they were both in for it.
They're just gentlemen. Yeah, they're exactly having a fight, and that's,
yeah, you know, Gatti-esque, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that I mean, it doesn't always take one person to be the bad guy.
No.
And again, we saw that on Saturday with Usyk Joshua.
Sure.
Love that. Everyone's talking about it, but there was no people bad-mouthing. And I think quite often in boxing, you know, you've got a proper fight when no one's bad-mouthing. You know, like Kessler Froch, they're all right. They like each other now. They text each other.
Yeah, sure.
Same with Kessler and Joe.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, I think that's, once you get to a certain level, that class kicks in.
Yeah, yeah. Going back to Groves, by the way, that journey, the Eubank fight, obviously you were involved with because it was in the Super Series, and then the Saudi final with Callum Smith and stuff. You've had a lot of, probably more ups and downs, because obviously you're factoring the Gutnet fight as well. Probably more ups and downs with George than anyone else.
Definitely.
And then the Chudinov fight.
Yeah.
And extreme ups and downs.
Yeah.
Obviously winning the title at his umpteenth attempt. Is it fourth attempt? And then obviously third? having the Gutnet fight, the Froch loss, the big KO. Like, you've been through it all with Groves.
Yeah. No. It was a mad journey. I think George is, he's one of those, he's not, you know, not everyone loves George, and he doesn't give a shit. You know, and that's what I like about him. He's his own man. And I think, you know, if you see him at the end of that first Froch fight, and it was just him and, was it Paddy in the corner? And then you had the whole team with Froch.
Yeah, yeah.
And you saw that photo and you're like, that sort of sums up George. You know, he's his own man. And that kind of, you know, it wasn't the easiest journey. You know, but it was, you definitely felt it. Put it that way. You felt the ups and downs.
Well, talking of freedom, obviously tell me about the Gutnet fight. That has to be up there with one of the worst nights.
Oh,
if not the.
Yeah, no, it was definitely up there with, you know, with probably one of my worst nights personally. Probably the worst night. You know, I was obviously, we were involved with Gutnet. We promoted him, and then he left us. He went to Viking Boxing, and then he came. He came over to fight George, and George was with us. So, you know, and I Eddie was, you know, we there was no animosity between us at all. We got on with him, and you know, he was trained by Uli for a while. I went to see him backstage after the fight because he took a lot of punishment. And I think, he, you know, the corner could have maybe chucked in the towel or someone. There was no point in being in there past a certain point.
Sure.
You know, and that's. And I, you know what, you can't blame anyone. It's maybe he should have, you know.
Oh, it's such a tough one, isn't it? When it, you know,
he was too brave for his own good.
There's generally debates about it, certainly monthly. You know, who should, you know, if a fighter's 8 or 9 rounds down, you know, at what point does the corner pull him out? At what point does the referee pull him out? At what point does the doctor pull him out?
Exactly.
You know, what time? Who what can point pull does the towel out? Come out?
Yeah,
come
when, in? You know, so the ref kicks the towel in sometimes.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, time. You know, some people think that there's someone sat on a Hail Mary punch when it doesn't, you know, when it's not going to show
not
up.
Come, yeah. But there was nothing going back from him.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't see anything going back from Eddie from round nine or so. I went to see him backstage and he collapsed pretty much in front of me. It was awful. Just, you know, obviously went to see him in hospital for a couple of weeks and then every day. And then he got flown back to Germany. And obviously George went to see him and, you know, that's never easy. Sure. To take a fighter to go and see his opponent and his family, who don't actually speak, so I had to translate for him, and it was a very, you know, emotional encounter, I think, for George as well. And I think he'll say that as well, but, you know, obviously he will, you know, it's human. It was something that, you know, that left a bad taste in my mouth for a while. It made me second guess boxing for a bit, you know, because you're sort of sitting ringside and, you know, let's say the next time I was there, I was like watching any fight, I just wanted to stop it, you know, because you just don't want to see anyone get punched.
Sure. The other side of it.
Yeah. And then I had, you know, Eric as well, same thing, you know, that was awful.
Eric
Skoglund.
Oh yeah, of course.
You know, and that wasn't far off that. I mean, that was, you know, he's obviously, he's pretty much recovered now.
How's Eddie?
Eddie's not in a good way, you know, not in a good way. It was, you don't know how to feel in those. Do you feel guilt? Do you feel emotion? What emotion do you feel? You know, it was.
Yes, unknown territory, isn't it?
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, you feel guilty. You know, it's like, it wasn't my show, but it was still, I felt responsibility in some way.
Going back to Kessler, what does he mean to you in and away from boxing? Because in many ways, he was your flagship fighter, wasn't he?
Kessler's still a very good friend of ours. He was at my wedding. He was still fighting when he was at my wedding. I saw him recently. He was in Austria. I don't know if you saw that bizarre show where we had lots of different countries. And then we also had Hrgović fighting.
Yes,
it wasn't bizarre.
Yeah.
It was just like a lot of different.
Sure. Yeah.
It was like a very eclectic mix in the middle of the Austrian countryside.
Yeah, I saw a load of
beautiful.
There were some English fighters that had their pictures done with them.
Yeah, exactly.
It was
lovely, man.
Yeah.
It was lovely. But no, he's got a very, very good young fighter, similar to him, super middleweight, Oliver Zarin. I think he's 4-0, 5-0 now. He'll have one more fight by the end of the year, but he's very exciting. And
is he with you or not?
He's with us, yeah.
Okay.
He's in Denmark. It's very difficult to find fighters because, you know, it's 4.5 million people. It's not, boxing's not.
It's not football.
No. Yeah. No, exactly. It's not football. They've got so many other sports, handball or, you know, whatever else. Yeah, why are you going to go and get punched in the head? You know,
It's not big in the culture there, is it, at all?
No. But they, you know, they're Vikings. They like fighting, don't they?
But was Kessler, like, in many ways, because Kessler obviously was so successful and, you know, brought a lot to the table. Exciting fights, good-looking guy, articulate. He had a huge following there,
didn't
he?
Yeah, no, he still does. He still does. 100%.
Did he move to Monte Carlo for a bit? Or did he just have a place?
Before we had him, I think maybe he did for a bit, yeah.
But he lives in Denmark now.
He lives in Denmark, yeah.
But I've done the podcast with him. He was great.
Yeah, he's top. He's top guy. Still stays in shape. Still probably 80 kilos. You know, he could probably have a sweat and fight on Saturday. but yeah, no, super middleweight. He's a top guy. Top guy.
Are you pleased? When he went out, he had. Did he have an eye injury? Something, was there something? What was it?
I think it was similar to I'm not a doctor again, similar to what's the American kid? Did he have the welterweight Come on, help me here. Big star.
What era?
Now. Just
Spence.
Spence. Yeah, I think it's similar to that. I think it was similar to that.
Okay.
Like, you know, something that you had to have operated.
Because he thought about coming back, didn't he? And then did he get something in the jungle or something?
Yeah, he got a tick bite.
That's it. Yeah,
quite. Do you know what? In Scandinavia, that's quite common.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, you get some tick fever. Yeah.
Is Kessler and Abraham, would that have ever happened?
Yeah, they both wanted to do it. I don't know why it didn't happen. It's probably us going, don't want one of them to lose. One's important for Germany, one's important for Denmark, which is bad, which is, you know, as a fan.
Have one in each.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know who would have won.
Depends on the catch weight at 164.
Yeah, no, that would have been a good fight, but I think... I'm not going to put my opinions. I'll tell you off camera in a minute.
When we go weight wise, obviously they don't come bigger than big Nikolai Valuev.
Yeah.
How did you guys hook up? Because he was over here boxing for Maloney at the Elephant and Castle, wasn't he?
I've got no idea.
No, how do you wind up with the Russian silverback?
Do you know what? My old man's here on Friday. He's coming over. You can ask him. That was one of his ones. And, you know, my dad's like old school. You know, he's like, oh, that guy's big. Can he match him, right? And, you know, that's you got a marketing little
point
there.
You've got Primo Carnera of the 20th century.
Yeah, exactly. But then, my dad put Arthur Abraham in a Smurf hat. Did you know that?
Yeah,
Father Abraham.
Yeah. But didn't that get some traction?
Yeah, it got lots of traction. Yeah. But that's, you know, it's old school in a way.
Yeah.
But we got illegal letters from them saying they didn't want to be associated with Smurfs. Boxing. Yeah, to the Smurf brand. I guess, I don't know if it's Disney or who it is, but we got legal letters saying we can't do that. Yeah. But yeah, Valuev is interesting.
Did you work close? Did you work with him or was it?
I knew him.
Yeah.
Was all his fights pretty much, but
have you got any good value of travel stories? There's got to be something about him getting in a
black cab. I was just not
you flying first class everywhere.
God, yeah. Can you imagine being sat next to him on an EasyJet or a Ryanair flight?
No,
it would not be nice. What was the story? I listened to Jake the Snake on a podcast and he was talking about Andre the Giant, and didn't he? He couldn't go on a normal toilet. He had to go in the bath or something
I've
like
heard that.
I thought that was quite an interesting one.
What about food wise? Did he put away a lot of food? Did anything set him apart?
Do you know what? He read Tolstoy.
I've read this. So, he's a very philosopher, isn't he?
Yeah, he's very intelligent. He reads bedtime stories now in Russia. For kids, nighttime story. He's quite high up in the government, I think,
I've heard that as well.
St. Petersburg. He's a brainy guy, you know.
He wasn't bad as a fighter, is he?
No, all he could do is throw a 1-2, but, you know, it was quite a good 1-2.
It was quite a rangy 1-2.
Exactly. I just remember, you know, one of my memories of him is David Hay making him dance in the 12th round.
Yeah.
That was... I haven't seen anything like that. And that was his last fight.
Yeah,
was his last fight.
Yeah, exactly. Did you guys have talks to bring him back? Did you want him to fight again, or was it like?
I think he was set in his mind that he didn't want to fight again
because he was hurt. Because he made his money, and that was.
He made his money. I think he had really good opportunities with the government, like the Russian government.
Yeah,
let's not go there. apparently there's an election on at the moment.
He's big into hunting as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the done thing in Russia.
I guess all the animals can see him coming, though, because he's bigger than most of them.
Oh, no, I've seen him in the duck hat. Duck hunting hat. I saw that somewhere. I don't know where I saw that. But, yeah, that was quite...
Nice guy. Is he a nice guy?
Nice guy.
Is he like a gentle giant?
Yeah. Doesn't speak a lot of English. Didn't like fighting. Didn't enjoy it, I don't think. You know?
Did he ever do stuff with King?
Yeah, we did. We had. I'll send you an image. We got a photo of King.
Was it?
We did a co-promotion with King. It was Valuev against Monty Barrett.
Okay.
Chicago. And we had a got Trump was there, got a photo of King, Trump and Valuev. But Trump was he was upset that he wasn't as tall as Valuev, so he had to rearrange the photo a few times, apparently. So a bit mad. 6'4", isn't he, Trump?
Is he? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what's Valuev? 7'2".
Yeah. I think it ranges from... my dad would probably say 7'4". For the effect.
And someone else might say 6'10".
Yeah, probably about 7 foot.
Yeah. He's bigger than your average bear, isn't he?
Yeah. He's a big boy. I think heavyweights, though, on the whole now... You know, I was saying to... randomly my wife, I was like, she's like, oh, Usyk so small compared to Joshua. I was like, yeah, but you know, you go back to the Ali days. I don't know what did Ali weigh in at. I'm not an expert at that, but probably around 100, right? I mean, I don't mean
what, kilos?
Yeah,
he would have been about 210, 215.
Yeah.
And then you got Marciano, who's way smaller than
that. Yeah, so
I mean,
it's just, we've got
smaller
a bigger
than Joshua, level. But he's still a big man.
It's a big guy, yeah. But, you know, when you're looking at them in the ring, for the lay person, her point of view, she was like, he's so much smaller.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think people don't realise that we've just become a bigger human race, haven't we?
What was it like working with David Hay, by the way? Do you like it?
Yeah, David's a great guy. Great guy.
Because you had options on him for giving him the value of fight, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct. No, look, David's, you know, if you look what he's done, you know, and with, you know, obviously Adam as well, you know, so and actually George, it's the same sort of, you know, strong-headed mentality that they're going to go their own way, and I like and I appreciate that. I like a rebel, and you know, if you I think they met, did they meet at Third Space Gym in Piccadilly or something, and what they did with him, you know, going from cruiserweight to heavyweight, it's pretty good, and fighting on the road against
Mormek,
lost to Carl Thompson,
sure.
So yeah, lost to Carl Thompson, comes back and beats Mormek on the road, and then fights Macronelli. Then when
yeah,
does
he unifies,
go?
Then yeah, he goes unifies. Up to. He fights Monty Barrett, doesn't
I
he?
Remember Macronelli came into Tom Petty. I won't back down.
That's it. Yeah, that was his go-to.
And
thing.
Just before that, that was my first white collar fight. I was like, right, I'm coming in Tom Petty. No, I won't back down because I'd seen Enzo coming into it, and then I saw. That fight thing ended in 3 rounds. I was like, right, I've got to change my song. I went for something else. But yeah, no, where was I? David. No, he's a good guy to work with. You know, it was. Someone brought this up to me the other day. I don't know who it was, but, you know, with Josh Kelly losing, you know, against Avanesian. And I think, you know, if you look at what happened with Carl Thompson, it was Carl Thompson, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Black Cat, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was the thing. And, you know, and then David Hay got brought back to become what he was.
Sure.
I think that's going to happen to Josh.
Okay.
That's what I think, you know, and I think Adam's the right guy to
gotta
do
say
that.
Same guy in the corner.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. You know, and I think he's only, what, 12 fights or something? So it was...
Yeah, if that.
I think
10,
he's
fights,
got big careers. I'm a little bit ADHD here. I'm jumping up and, you know, different directions.
No, it's fine.
And stuff.
No, I like it. I like it. It's good.
Yeah. So I'll like have one catalyst for another. You know,
yeah. No,
back
it's good.
Well.
No, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Obviously, so Josh is one of your guys now moving forward, which was one of your big announcements.
I'm very excited about him. I'm very excited about him.
It's interesting because obviously, you know, in today's day and age, if you take a loss, you're written off.
Yeah.
And you're a guy who, you know, can't beat, you know, you've found your level, and instantly that's what's happened. And many people are now saying, well, Josh Kelly, good fighter, good combinations on Instagram, and that's it.
Yeah. I keep going back to Saturday just, but, you know, just because someone loses, I don't think it means that it's over, and people are so quick in
well,
the boxing world.
You know what?
We are our own worst enemies, yeah?
Yeah,
is because we'll go, the matching is rubbish, or fans I'm talking, oh, the matching is rubbish, oh, it's a tough match. Then someone loses and you go like, oh, you're shit, you're this, you're that. But because it's been good matching, you might have lost. But don't write people off because they can come back. It's not like football where you get subbed, right? You know, if you have a bad night in football, you get subbed off. Well, boxing, get knocked out.
Reading Russell Peltz's book at the moment about Philadelphia boxing, and Benvenuti, Nino Benvenuti took a non-title 10-rounder against someone who was just coming up, lost it, and then trained hard for the rematch, for which was a title fight, and then stopped the guy.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, you can't. Not everyone's going to approach fights at the same sort of level, but also it doesn't mean that just because Benvenuti lost to that guy, that guy's actually better than him.
No, on the night.
Exactly.
You know, so you know but Benvenuti, is he still, he's still alive, isn't he?
Yeah.
He must be mid-70s.
So. I believe so, yeah.
I mean, I saw him at the WBC recently.
Yeah, I've seen him a few times.
Smooth dude, right?
Definitely. I mean, definitely.
You know, he looks...
Still looks like a model.
Yeah. He had, what, 60-odd fights?
Yeah.
Did he... What weight was he? Did he fight Emil... Did he fight Emil Griffiths? Am I going mad?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, he did, didn't he?
He ended
That's
up,
a good book.
He, Griffith ended up being Benvenuti's kid's godfather.
Wow. Okay. That have you read that book?
A Man's World by Don McRae. Yeah, brilliant book.
That's a good book. Yeah. I enjoyed that. It's a mad story. What was the guy? Benny? No.
Benny Kid Perrette.
See the one he, yeah,
the,
that's
the,
it.
The Cuban who died.
Benny Perrette, yeah, that's it, yeah. And he called him a Maracon.
Yeah, which is when he called him basically a homosexual at the wedding. And Griffith was in the closet at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he made like hats and stuff, didn't he?
That's it, yeah. For Howie Albert, his manager. Yeah.
I love boxing.
Yeah.
For those stories.
Mad world.
Yeah. Like I said, there's no barrier to entry. Anyone can have a go.
Yeah, it's true. Although Emil was surrounded by some good people back then. I was going to ask as well, probably one of the guys that doesn't get the same amount of attention is Robert Stieglitz.
Yeah.
What's he like?
Stieglitz isn't with us, though. He was with he's with SES. He lost to Abraham. What, twice? 3-1, was it? 2-1.
Yeah, so I kind of figured because he fought Abraham.
No,
so
we know him well. Yeah, okay. Nice guy. Yeah, nice guy.
What's
I don't
his
know
sort
what he's
of profile
to?
Like in
not that,
Germany?
No, not that. Not.
Didn't get to that level.
Not unheard of. But no, not nothing. He was with SES Boxing. Good fighter. Abraham, it was a weird one. It looked like it was. Remember, his eye went up.
Sure.
It was the second fight, and then the third fight, I think Abraham won. First fight, Abraham won. It was good points victory. Second fight, it got stopped on a blown up eye. Went to the scorecards. Or I do you know what? I need to reread that. I'm probably getting it's all wrong, and I'll get loads of messages.
No, but I know what you mean. But I kind of thought that because you'd had Stieglitz in the opposite corner so much that you'd done some stuff with him. But
not that I know of.
Yeah, no, fine. That's
not that I remember.
We did touch upon it briefly at the start, but you made a joke about hometown decisions. Where's the worst for the hometown decisions, UK or Germany?
At the moment.
Yeah, at the moment.
At the moment?
Yeah.
UK?
Historically?
Germany? Vegas?
That's come out of left field, but yeah, fair one. Okay. The worst one I still ever saw was CJ Ross and the draw for Canelo against Mayweather. That's probably the worst.
Do you know what? It's funny. I was wearing that T-shirt this morning in the gym.
Oh, for the one.
Yeah, one. Yeah, I got that T-shirt.
Great show.
I had it on.
Great show.
Cool graphics, actually. Yeah. The one. Yeah. That was mad.
Were you out there for that?
No. I knew it was gonna be a big. Like I just wanted the T-shirt.
Yeah, yeah. It was huge.
And my mate got me one. I'm not. You know, look. If it's not my show, I generally unless I'm scouting someone.
So you think the UK is quite bad for decisions at the minute?
At the moment, I think it's not great. But, you know, it's...
Do you sympathise with the judges? Or do you think,
there's three sides to every story, right? There's the fan side where they're like, why can't the judge get it right? Oh, it's obvious. Then there's the judge who... They're not professional judges. They are, but... You know, it's not their full-time job. Yeah. You know, they're quite often So it's other not a weekend away, but you know, they're there to do a job, but they're there as well. It's maybe sometimes the training's not there. They hear the crowd on, you know, when a shot hits the gloves or doesn't hit the gloves. They might be judging on a total different style of, you know, more punches rather than bigger punches, or, you know, they're counting like 10 punches on the gloves as opposed to one big shot landing. There's also, you know, there should be consistency on what you're looking for.
Sure.
I don't know. Do you know what that is? I get a little bit. I sit
you
there.
Think
I
you
sit.
Know my brother. Is, and my then brother you get put things that really make your head scratch. And you're like, well, yeah. We're clearly not all on the same page.
No. No, and I've saw that with the Golovkin Canelo fight.
Yeah, sure.
I had Golovkin winning the first one. I had to draw the second one, and that was me sitting there and pointing. But I'm not. Again, I'm not a judge, but I guess I could be a judge.
Yeah, I mean, there's a point where you'd like to think that common sense dictates.
Yeah.
You know, if you're watching a football match, it's 5-0.
There's some blatant decisions where you're just like, what was that? I thought Eubank Jr. gave Ricky Hatton's son a really, you know, a good piece of advice. I thought that was a funny decision on Saturday. I don't think I'm the only one, and I don't think me saying that is a
controversial thing.
No, and I don't think it's a dig at anyone. I think you Junior gave him a good bit of advice to go and do smaller shows and get that experience, you know, where people don't know your name, because it can be a burden.
Sure.
You know, like for anything. Obviously, less for me, but I'm Sauerland, right? People sort of know, oh, well, he should know about boxing, or he should be able to put on a show. There's obviously pressure on me, not as much as someone getting punched in the face or having to punch people in the face, but I get what he was saying, you know, and that's not a bad thing. But I don't think it does him any benefit of getting a bad decision. You know, I don't think that's career end. You know, press stop, you know, go and do something else. I think it's go and get experience other places.
Sure, sure.
Maybe not on an AJ undercard.
We talked about what I said about with Josh Kelly there, where, you know, obviously instantly now people are saying, well, Campbell's lost a 4-round fight and
that's over. It's over, it's done.
Lost it,
Bernard Hopkins, what did Bernard, Johnny Nelson.
Yeah.
Johnny Nelson.
Yeah.
Brilliant example.
There's been a few of them.
You know,
so
it doesn't mean just because you lose a fight at the beginning of your career doesn't. Or, you know, I would actually think that it would probably do Campbell give him a better career by giving him the right decision there, because that would make him think about it. Because now he's won. So now he can go on to the next show and probably fight again, and then might lose worse. Yeah, there's worse ways of losing. Yeah, so why not just go and recollect, rethink, and go back at it, because he's no doubt, look, Ricky Hatton's one of the biggest fighters ever in UK boxing. He's got the pedigree, you can see he can fight. It wasn't his night, but go and do it under the radar a little bit. Be stealth with it.
Yeah, of course. How can Wasserman Boxing attract the biggest names then? Because your idea is to be up there with PBC, Top Rank, Matchroom, and those guys.
Yeah, I mean, we want to be back up there again. You know, I think we've got a really good stable now. We're obviously having looks at other fighters, looking at other markets.
Olympians.
I think it was a good stable this year at the Olympics. I think that me and my brother have been at the top. We still believe we're one of the best promoters out there. And as far as building a career and building kids into world champions, we're good at that. We've got a good track record of that. We've got Hrgović into a good position after 13 fights. We've got Bradis as a world champion now. Obviously Junior's coming back in, and we've got a good young stable as well that we're gonna build forward with.
And what's the difference between, where does the World Boxing Super Series fit into all this?
It's totally separate from me. So my brother's still chief boxing officer on that, I believe.
Okay.
I don't know.
So you just help him with it?
I don't know what. Look, I'll give advice and help where I can, because I was involved in the creation of it and gave my input on sort of the ways that we can get around teething issues, or, you know, like the world, the Super Series, you know, to make sure it runs a little bit quicker,
sure,
and to a schedule. But I'm out of that. I'm not involved. I'll help when I'm asked to.
Do you like it? Do you like the concept?
I think it's a great concept. Yeah, yeah.
Cruiserweights: Marco Hook, Juan Pablo Hernandez, Steve Cunningham. Good times.
Great times, man. Great fight. I thought Hook, you know, was a brilliant world champ, considering he, you know, let's be honest, he wasn't a boxer, was he? He was a fighter. He was like a brawler.
He was super famous, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's
got there.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know why we didn't mention him. Yeah, he did well. 13 defenses or something at the WBO. I do, you know, he was.
And then he stepped up.
I would say he's not everyone's cup of tea, but I think he is everyone's cup of tea because he's bloody exciting. You know, he took loads of shots and he gave loads of shots.
And then he stepped up and gave Povetkin a good fight, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah, that was a mad night. Povetkin didn't turn up for that, did he?
I've got a feeling that you and your brother, when you say I've had a mad night, I bet it was absolutely mental.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was a lot of arguing because, you know, when it's the same stable, you know, especially with a Russian, you know, German with all the politics.
Paranoia.
Yeah, there's a lot of paranoia there. So there are people accusing people of doing stuff to each other's waters and, yeah, you know.
Media bias, all that.
Yeah, but accusations of this, that, tampering with water and making them feel, you know, you say things in the heat of a moment. Well, I would never say something like that, but you hear people, you know, and people are emotional after a fight, you know, but once the dust settled, look, there's so many people, I think, in boxing that I've sort of had disagreements with in the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
Afterwards, you just like shake hands. You know, I don't think there's anyone in boxing really, bar a couple of people, that I wouldn't, you know, have a coffee with. Yeah. 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 And I think that's, you know, there is some honour amongst thieves.
Well, I was going to say, people.
Pardon the pun.
I was going to say, people all the time talk about corruption and bad people in the sport. You're at the sharp end. Like, how bad is it? Is it, like you say, just a few people giving the sport a bad rep, or is it quite dog eat dog?
I don't know. I mean, there's different, you know, if you look at it, there's different, you know, from the outside, if you're looking in as a fan, I think there's a lot of different ways you can, you know, you think and imagine that there's corruption, but actually sometimes not any corruption. It's just not being good at your job. you know, when you're judging a fight, it's not corruption, it's just getting it wrong. With corruption, I think it's an old sort of, I'm thinking about Sonny Liston days, or
yeah, Philadelphia mob guys.
I haven't experienced that kind of stuff.
Have you stitched people up as a promoter? Have you stitched them up in bad hotels or made them drive many miles to go to weigh-ins? You've done all that stuff. Given them flights to destinations that are 8 hours away, but they've had four connections and stuff.
I probably have by mistake.
Is that your line of defence, saying it was an accident?
Yeah, yeah. So, mate, I'm so sorry.
Never happened again.
Yeah, no. South End, it's London. South End Airport. So I'm just... No, look, there's gamesmanship.
Have you played the game?
I think when I've been away, I think, you know, I've complained about gloves. And it's normally when you're the away guy, I think, more than when you're the home, because you feel comfortable when you're at the home.
You don't
fighter.
Feel the need to try and get
I don't. I think, you know, there's always the gloves. Oh, the gloves.
Yeah, every time there's a big fight, Friday night, the headlines are like
the
drug
gloves,
row.
We're not
going to
fight.
Row.
We're not going to fight because I'm not wearing. You're going to wear those gloves because you want to. You've just been through a 2-month training camp or whatever it is, and you've made weight, and now you're not going to fight because, you know, someone's. I don't know, you don't like the way their gloves feel. You're going to fight, or you're going to find a solution. We've had it quite a few times. All re-wrapping their hands, which is generally not me, but when I'm on the road, you know, you watch out for stuff.
Yeah.
You know, stacking and, you know, all that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Have you got any other good Don King stories? Because I know that he's worked with your dad for decades.
I remember being around at his house.
Don's house?
Yeah. In Florida. And I go to the... He's like, yeah, help yourself to a drink, man. Like, me and my brother, like, come on. I think we were like 18 or something. Oh, get beer, like loads of beers. Then take a beer. It's like 4 years old. It was like so out of date. It tasted like absolute.
I'm trying to think. Look on the surface.
Yeah, I just remember
it's
like
a metaphor for the sport.
Yeah, exactly. He used to have the most, like, I remember being there and he had the most amazing barbecues and he's smoking, you know, like the smoke. They used to smoke the beef and the brisket and whatever else. Unbelievable barbecues.
Did you like being in his company?
I mean, last time I did anything with him was Soygo against Ekpo.
Okay.
And there's always drama, you know. Oh, I wanted 8 business class seats. And you're like, oh, it's 4 in the contract. Or, you know, and there's always something. But you know what? As far as, you know, dealing with him, it's, you know, he always brings a show to town. I think he's, you know, allegedly done a lot of bad in you know, by fighters, which is never nice to see. I never like, you know, hearing of boxers who've, you know, it comes to the end of the career.
Lost a lot and they've, or whatever, they've, yeah, you know, yeah, sure.
But also sometimes, you know, due to money mismanagement as well. I mean, buy, you know, you need to...
If you spend more than you make, you're in trouble.
Yeah, you don't have a 30-year career. Yeah, you know, you've got a 10-year career. That's it. Get in, get out, keep your marbles and make some dough.
Keep what you can, yeah. I was going to say, what's your career high? But having done Babe Station, I guess that was...
Yeah, sorry. No, I mean, I'm trying to think of jobs. I've had quite a few jobs in my life.
Oh, you said about interviewing Carlos Ortiz earlier. How did that come about?
That was... I was quite young and then...
Carlos Ortiz, one of the great fighters still going in New York. He might be the oldest Hall of Famer still alive.
Yeah, I called Jake LaMotta to get an interview.
Okay.
That was unbelievable. Like,
so what was that for and how did that come about?
So I had to do my... thesis or whatever, like I had to make a piece, and mine was a documentary, and I ended up getting to New York with a camera guy who's a mate, and shared a room for a month in New York and just did it on boxing, spent a lot of time at the Gleasons.
Just as a university project?
Yeah.
Wow.
Ended up, do you know what the issue was, you know, you'll know, is when you don't have a narrative or a story that you were actually going after. As a documentary maker, you're there. And boxing, as you know, there's so many interesting different stories.
Sure.
So you go into this gym and suddenly I'm hanging out with my friend's girlfriend who is a female boxer who is friends with all these other female boxers who are, like, one was a lesbian rapper, like, really, I didn't realize there was a big gay scene in rap.
Right.
And I ended up going to a rap night with this boxer. She had a few pro fights. I don't mean she won, but she was a rapper as well. Going off track. Called Jake LaMotta. That's it. Jake LaMotta. Called him up. Like, oh my God, he answers the phone. He's like, hi, can I do an interview with you? He goes, how much you paying? I go, I'm a student. He goes, so? I'm like, $100? He goes, not even in the ballpark, baby. And just slams the phone down.
Wow.
I thought that was quite cool.
I've got a story very similar to that.
Really?
Yeah, when I was in New York and I was writing, I was doing a load of freelance stuff at the time, penniless. I called Jake up and I said, excuse me, Mr. LaMotta, I'm in New York and I'd like to do an interview with you. He says, how much money you got, kid? I said, well, geez, Mr. LaMotta, I don't have much money. He said, well, kid, if you haven't got the money, you haven't got the money. Slam the phone down. I went and interviewed Jose Torres instead.
Oh, man. That's funny. What about, did Don get you? Do you know Don Majewski?
Yeah, I've done the podcast with Don.
He's brilliant. Yeah. He's a great guy. Herb Goldman?
He puts our memories to shame.
Yeah, do you know Herb?
Yeah, I know Herb. Yeah,
I interviewed him. And I was, do you know what? I did something at Pelts. He had a show, and I think I filmed. That was it. I was following a young boxer out there. That was it. And I've forgotten his name as well. Jorge Terón. He got to 20-0. He got knocked out by, could be Brandon Rios, actually. Right. He was like a 6-foot lightweight, randomly. Right. And I was trying to do something around him and his first fight and stuff. Ended up interviewing Herb Goldman at his, because he's in the Freemasons. Where they meet?
Right,
Interviewing him in front of this. Yeah, it was a bit weird. But he's a great talker. He's got one of those gravelly New York accents.
Yeah, yeah.
And knows everything.
Yeah, he does like the auctions and stuff at the Hall of Fame.
He did the book, didn't he? All the fights that ever happened.
Oh, okay.
But then Box Rec got invented.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a good life's work.
So, you know, obviously I said about boxing in Germany at the minute in terms of the scene. How big is it? Like, does it get into the newspapers and stuff? Because over here, obviously, it's a constant battle to get into the newspapers, unless you're an AJ, pretty much.
I think in Germany at the moment, we're lacking that one star. And I think we've got a good crop now. We got Sophie Arlish, who's, 19, maybe 20 now, but she's she's been boxing since she was 17. Bas Barrow, who trains with Adam Booth, and a few other really good Feigenbutz, Bunn, Radovan, Bauer, and Vajiki. But the issue is that then no one's sort of taking that next step.
Are any of these Wasserman boxing shows on the TV in Germany? Have you got a TV deal for them in Germany?
Yeah. First date is going to be announced tomorrow.
What is it?
December.
What's on it?
It'll be, mate. But it's going to be Barrow, but the opponent just pulled out.
Oh no! Okay.
That's Barrow. Boxing. Yes, it's a constant nightmare. Constant night. Some shows, you're just like, oh, it's beautiful. I feel great. And some shows, you're just like, oh no, I can't do it anymore.
So, I obviously asked how big boxing was in Germany. How big are you guys in Germany? If we got Eddie Hearn over here in the UK, how big are the Sauerland brothers in Germany?
Nah, I think, Eddie's done a great job as, Eddie could go and he could be an actor. I could see him going on or going on like
James Bond.
James Pond. I could see him on like a TV show. It's like he's brilliant. He's great to have lunch with, and he's got that. He's got the chat. So we're in Germany. It's a lot. The audience is tough. The audience is very tough. And it's also quite old-fashioned. It's still written press there quite a lot. It's not. Right. It's social media is like Twitter is for politicians or governments and whatever else. Instagram is growing. Facebook is still the biggest there, but it's moving in the right direction. It's moving. We need younger people to get into boxing.
Yeah, of course. And how do you do that?
Get a star, but it's that catch 22. I think we've got a good partner now, and I think going forward it will be we've got the talent. All we need is one of those guys to step up and become a world champion.
And I'm sure that you guys have laid out long, medium and short term goals for Wasserman, but what is the long term goal? Is it to be the dominant force? Is it to be like a UFC style thing to have that much of control of the market share, or is it to be just one of the major players?
I think I'd like to say that we're still a major player now.
You know what I mean in terms.
But I think UFC is you know, I think UFC is you can't do that in boxing. And I think you see that we got Bellator here as well. So Bellator's, you know, because there's more MMA fighters coming in and diluting. Yeah, there's too many boxers out there to control. PBC try to do it. It's not going to work. But with us, I think, you know, in the UK, we got Eubank. You got, who's more popular above Eubank in the UK? I'm just trying to think now.
Yeah, you put me on the spot.
AJ?
Fury.
White
does, White would do good numbers.
Yeah,
Chisora's still doing good numbers TV yeah. wise. I'm
but he's
sure.
lost 11 times.
Yeah, no. Hey, but yeah. you asked about drawing power.
Yeah, but I would say Eubank is in the top five. So sure. I think that's a strategic yeah. signing for us, and we also see his potential. And I don't think, you know, I think
he's the dream. I spoke to Chris the other day about this. He'd love to get the Golovkin fight. Is that achievable for you guys?
I mean, it's a great fight for Chris now.
Do you think that's achievable to
yeah.
make?
Yeah. I think it's definitely achievable to make. I think Chris, everyone, you know what, I'm going to get a lot of stick. I think Chris can beat him. I really do. I think it's the right time as well to take Golovkin. He's taking more shots than ever. But he's fighting Murata, isn't he, December 28th, I think. But see after that. But, you know, obviously with Chris, there's Liam Williams as well.
He's number one for that belt, isn't he? Chris
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
So, really, you should be in line for a shot at the winner.
It's WBA. I don't know. I thought we were interim champs. It's very confusing. I mean, I understand fans as well to a certain extent. And I actually rate Gilberto, and he said he's going to get rid of the interim belt. So, I think it's a good idea. I mean, there is a place for interim belts. When someone's injured for a long amount sure. of time, I really agree with that. But to have interim super champ, regular champ, I mean,
three
have
or
one
four
champ,
guys in the same weight class with the same. No, of course.
I think
doesn't.
One interim champ when someone's injured, it's fine. Or if they go up maybe in weight to test it, I don't know that even makes sense. But that's happened before, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Boxing,
and then
right?
Champions emeritus coming back and getting straight shots. And
yeah.
All the rest of it.
Is that sponsored by Emirates? They should do
it may
that.
As well be.
They should do an Emirates
well
belt.
Be. God, they've done everything else.
Yeah. I think they gave Usyk and Usyk a belt. it was WBC's Fury against Wilder, isn't it? So
yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. What you're saying? The WBC have given Usyk.
Yeah. Yeah. When he got back.
I don't know that.
Your man's.
Right, okay.
Man secret. How long have we just done?
Right, I don't know, but I appreciate your time.
No, it's good.
Really
it's good.
It.
When are we doing part two?
Well, we'll get you and your brother back. In together. Nice one, brilliant. Thank you cheers, very much, Nissa. Appreciate
cheers.
It.
Nice one.
Cheers.
Bro. Thanks.
I enjoyed finally sitting down with Nissa, who I interviewed several times for Boxing News many moons ago, but this was a lot of fun, and maybe we'll get the brothers together next time. I think that would be an interesting shout. loads of good stuff in there. It's always interesting to hear, I think, about the German scene. I think to hear about the scene in Denmark, where they're hugely influential as well. To hear about some of the personalities and the characters behind the guys who don't necessarily have English as their first language as well. It's good to sort of get to have another look at the other side of these guys rather than the fighters that you just see in the ring. A reminder, if you do want to support the podcast, you can find us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Tristix, and that allows you access early access to episodes and bonus content. We've been up on Patreon for more than a year now, I think, and there's plenty of stuff that's accumulated up there. You can find me on social media at Tris Dixon on Instagram and on Twitter, and you can search Boxing Life Stories on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Instagram. Huge thanks to Hanson Lee Resourcing. They were voted the UK's best specialist insurance sector recruitment firm at the Corporate Excellence Awards. Not only do they find you the best people, they'll help you retain them, and you can find out more at hansonlee.com. As I mentioned at the start, there is the opportunity to sponsor the YouTube channel, which is growing week by week. If you are interested, by all means, shoot me a message, and we'll be back next week.